fucking eat.
Yeah. Well,
so, what are you eating, Toshi?
Well, America had Thanksgiving.
Yes.
When they got the pig out, Japan doesn't have that.
I had Thanksgiving. You were invited, weren't you?
Yes, I was, but I was unavailable.
Yeah. So,
because I'm always unavailable, because I'm always working when I'm not.
I'm going to say this, because I think Tony does listen to this podcast, but even if he didn't, I'd still say this. He made, officially, the best Thanksgiving turkey I've ever had in my life.
Ooh.
I'm sorry to my mom. I'm sorry to my aunt. I'm sorry to anyone else who's ever made a Thanksgiving turkey, but this was the best. Ooh. And I found out the reason why. It's because he injected it with butter.
Ooh, wow. Impressive. Like, what was, like, injected as in what? Like, when the turkey was alive, he took a syringe and what?
Yes. Over its whole short, meaningless life. He raised it. He named it. His name was Wobbler.
You are terrible at names.
I am.
Do you have any pets? You don't have any pets.
Not here in Japan.
Your apartment, I'm assuming, does not allow pets?
No, but... sorry, I had to put my drink down. I've had a cockatiel that my mom is now taking care of in the U.S.
What's his name?
Her name is Alex.
Who named it?
I did. Hmm. I like picking real people names for pets. Hmm. I've had her since
Which
I was...
Which is why you just named a turkey Wobbler?
Wobbler. But that's not a pet. Tony was raising it so that we could enjoy its sweet, sweet flesh upon this holiest of holidays, which is Thanksgiving.
Not Halloween.
To commemorate...
Halloween is the most unholy of holidays.
Yes, the most unholy of holidays.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had my bird, my little cockatiel, for... It'll be 20 years next year.
Jesus, they live that long?
They live to be about 30.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's getting up there, but, yeah. She's up.
Cockatiels live longer than cats and dogs.
Yeah. Cockatiels live a long time. That's why it's really bad when people get parrots for elderly people. Because parrots, like African greys, can live to be, like, 50. Yeah.
I should get one of those now.
Yeah, get one now. And you'll probably die first.
Yeah.
But, like, people buy, like, parrots for their, like, 60-year-old parents or whatever, or 65-year-old parents when they retire, so that they have somebody to keep them company.
You know, I know where you're going with this, and I'm reminded of the Gary Larson Far Side cartoon, where you've got an empty house. Well, you see, like, behind a couch, you can see feet sticking out, and there's a parrot sitting in the corner going, "Ark, hello, knock, knock, hello, hello, knock,
aww,
knock."
So sad, but it's true. It's actually, like, there are bird sanctuaries. It's really fucking sad, because birds essentially mate for life, and they tend to, or parrots do, they tend to pick people as, like, their mate, not in, like, a...
Oh, wow. I understand, like, in a psychological sense. Yeah.
But, like,
there was actually a very famous... There was a Japanese, like, endangered crane that a guy, like, managed to rescue and raise. Like, he was raising it to return it to the wilderness, but it bonded with him, pretty much. Like, it would do mating dances with him. Like, and he'd wear all white and a red cap just to look like, you know, pretend he was another crane. I think this was, I forget how many years ago, this was over a decade ago, but, yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Yeah.
But, anyways. There's these bird sanctuaries where basically for widowed or widowered.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. To start the podcast off, the Wayward Podcast, oneofus.net.
Actually, the way I'd like to start it off by saying that we are assholes. We mentioned last time.
Fuck yeah.
Well, last time we mentioned, like, so what did you do? What's been going on the last time? No, not much. No, no. Yeah, we completely neglected to mention that we met up with one of our fans.
Yes, we have one fan.
Well, no, actually, he was the second of two who have offered to meet up with us.
We have two fans.
Yes. Well, we have two fans who are capable of visiting us in Japan. This podcast, which unfortunately is going to be another short one because schedules and shit like that, but Yeah, this podcast is for Eli.
Yep. Eli.
Eli C. We won't mention his last.
It was cool.
Name, but yeah.
Meeting up with you.
Yeah, we got to have lunch. We had okonomiyaki, a traditional Japanese meal,
which we
cook ourselves over a hot skillet, hot pan.
Yes, yeah. Japanese cooking. Japanese restaurants, a lot of them, you have to cook your own food.
Yeah.
Okonomiyaki, shabu-shabu, yakiniku.
Yeah. They trust their patrons with very, very...
With fire.
Yeah, with fire.
I don't think you should trust me with hot things.
Well, they have, like, you've eaten nabe ryori. Like, where they bring out open flame, and and you can cook your food on top of it. Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, so Eli, it was great meeting you. I mean, we had a lot of fun. A lot of interesting conversations. Mm-hmm. Eli was a spill migrant, much like us.
Yep. We did not forget about you.
Yeah, we were just assholes.
I was being an asshole. I actually haven't even listened to our last episode.
Oh.
Because I was, like, in such a bad mood, if you guys couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I was like, I fucking hate everything. Fuck Julian Blanc.
Yeah.
Fuck everything.
Well, I heard his tour got canceled. He canceled his tour, apparently.
Yay.
Yeah.
Success.
Yes. What was it? Was it England that revoked his visa?
Australia.
Australia. I'm sorry. Yes.
And I think Canada as well.
Yep.
I don't know what happened.
And he publicly apologized apparently, but like fuck that.
Ah.
Yeah. Like that's
his public non-apology.
So sincere apology. But anyways, before we piss off Sarah any further,
I would like. Sorry, I'm eating.
No, I'm eating too.
I would like to say.
Thanks.
Quickly. Later. Julian Blanc. His apology was what is called the Tommy Wiseau defense. Do you know who Tommy Wiseau is?
No, you're going to have to clarify this for me.
Have you ever heard of the movie The Room?
I think I should have.
It's considered one of the worst movies
yes.
of all time.
That one.
The director is Tommy Wiseau. It's a drama. I put that in quotes. It was meant to be a drama.
I watched the Cinema Sins roundup of that, and even that made me want to turn it off.
Oh, I've seen it like 10 times.
Why?
Because it's so entertaining.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, just what was it? It's like 10 minutes or something. The digest version of it was so bad. And I'm sorry, it does not escalate so to the so bad it's good level for me. It was
I watched it with Riff Tracks. MSG3K guys, which makes it really, really.
I think
hilarious.
That would probably be. I think that would probably be the only tolerable version of it.
That's how I watch Twilight too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
I actually watched Twilight and New Moon.
Without
anything.
Oh god! I saw Twilight in the theater drunk. I didn't remember any of it.
I watched those. I watched. I watched Batman and Robin, and I watched, what was it? Ah, shit. I watched Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen, and Wolverine Origins. Just because I wanted to be able to say, like, not just because I hate myself, but because that's one of the reasons, obviously. But I also wanted to be able to say, I wanted to be able to actually comment on how bad they are legitimately. Like,
yeah.
Very often, I'll hear something from somebody, and then I'll just basically relay what they said.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just like, everybody hates these, obviously, but I also want to be able to weigh in legitimately.
Yeah,
which was
fair.
A really bad idea.
That's absolutely
it's
fair.
Really, honestly, if anyone is trying to be, like, noble and, I don't know, like, up above the crowd, like, above the plebeians and say, like, I want to be able to legitimately criticize these terrible movies, it's a really bad idea. Do not do it. I did it. It's a really bad idea. Just take everybody's word for it.
Yes. Don't think you are smarter than everyone else and that you can find some kind of new level of horribleness, new tidbit in there.
There is nothing you can add. So.
I see food coming.
Oh, okay. Yay. I'm not even going to pause because I'm an asshole. But
yep.
Oh, yeah. There's your
yes.
meal.
Oh, awesome. I have some fried rice.
Bring us back. Yes, wanted to thank Eli. And I also James, who wanted to meet up with us, but because of scheduling, we never
Yeah,
really got, never
sorry
got to
about
meet him.
That.
Very sorry, but...
Okay, so anyway, the Tommy Wiseau defense...
Yes, moving on.
...is that Tommy Wiseau said that his movie, The Room, was actually a parody. Which, if you watch it, there is nothing in there to suggest it's parody of anything. So Julian Blanc claims that his tweets that talk about, you know, sexually harassing women or, like...
His videos?
The video were jokes gone wrong. Bad jokes that fell on deaf ears sort of thing, which is absolutely the worst defense because it's so obviously it's not.
Fuck that guy.
Digging. Did you want any of this fried rice, Toshi?
No, I'm fine.
Are you all right?
Okay. I'm munching on fried something.
I usually don't use...
Happy Thanksgiving. Actually, it's now the Christmas season, but...
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Yeah. It became happy birthday. So, that defense does not fly in court, the court of, you know, society. Hmm. So, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should give him any more attention.
Right. So let's move on. It is actually now the Christmas season. Oh, actually, sorry. Nope. Let's go on to Christmas first.
Yep.
It is Christmas season in Japan, which is... I don't really like Christmas in Japan.
Me neither.
Because it's become...
Well, yep, go on.
I'm sorry. Well, Christmas in Japan, much like other holidays, much like Valentine's, has become a holiday... Well, I'll get to my hatred of Valentine's on another date, but
yep,
it's Valentine's. Christmas is essentially it's a holiday for couples,
mm-hmm.
And for the longest time I was single, so that just it feels like a holiday to rub it in. I mean,
oh yeah,
to people who are single, and yeah, generally loners really hate Christmas. But I mean, not just that, but for me, Christmas has always been about family. And, I mean, celebrating, you know, being with the ones you love, yes, maybe, I mean, a significant other, obviously, but Christmas has always been about family for me, and the Japanese version just really did not gel for me at all. So.
Mm-hmm. I hate Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere, any country. Mm. I'd probably have to go to Iran to actually enjoy December 25th, where no one is celebrating Christmas. Sorry, that's extreme. But I don't think the colors red and green go together.
Okay.
I don't like Christmas music.
They're on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Yes, they are. Okay.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Red goes with green on the color wheel, but fuck that. Fuck the color wheel, I say.
Orange and teal. But
orange and teal.
I'm sorry.
Burnt red. What's it called? I forgot. Whatever. Anyway.
I don't know.
Christmas for me growing up was not unpleasant,
mm-hmm.
I would say. I don't think I have, like, some horrible, horrible memories of Christmas.
Not like Gremlins?
No. I've actually never seen Gremlins.
Oh!
I know.
That's a fun
one. On my list. My mom is a former Catholic. My dad is Jewish. We mostly focused on the Jewish stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I've been an atheist since I was like 8 years old.
God, when I memories of the just the minute you said the Jewish part, memories of South Park first season. Just I'm sorry,
first season.
It's hard to be a Jew in Christmas. Anyways,
I like the South Park Christmas specials. My favorite is definitely the Christmas Critters.
Have not seen it.
Oh God,
I need to see it. Yeah.
You need to watch. I'm not going to spoil it, but it's. It's really disturbing, which South Park is
very
known
good
for doing, yeah, very well. But, like, Hanukkah, as all Jews know, isn't as great as it sounds. So,
When you're an infant, like, in elementary school, the concept of getting a, you know, presents over a series of days sounds cool.
Yes, it sounds cool. So I grew up in a suburb of Chicago. My family was the only Jewish family for, like, miles. And so we were the only ones who celebrated Hanukkah. So it was always my responsibility every year in class in elementary school to explain what Hanukkah was.
Oh, God.
So...
Yeah, the tokens.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I got to do that as a token Japanese.
Ah, tell us about Japan, yeah. Toshi. Well, now you're doing it
yeah.
as a podcast.
As a podcast, yay. I'd say professionally, but we're not getting paid.
Yeah, well, we're getting paid in attention,
yep.
which is how I measure success. So Hanukkah was like this really... It sounded really cool to all my Christian friends or the friends who really did, like, hardcore Christmas. What they were imagining was Christmas for 8 days.
Yeah.
I remember going to a neighbor kid's house, and it was like Dudley Dursley from Harry Potter on his birthday, where he cries about getting 35 presents instead of 36 presents.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends like that. Who, like, they're underneath their tree, it was just, like, stacks of presents. Mountains.
Yeah.
There were billy goats climbing boxes. There was a little Swiss man in lederhosen yodeling yeah. upon the boxes. And I mean, they got, like, yeah. big stuff. Video games, bicycles, people went on trips to Disney World, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
My mom is... she was born in a Dutch colony, and her parents are Dutch, and she spent a lot of her childhood in the Netherlands. And the Netherlands, the Dutch version of Christmas, is very simple. American Christmas is insane compared to European Christmas. So my mom's version of Christmas was like a little souped-up version of the Dutch version. We had a tree, we had lights and stuff and stockings, but presents were, like, simple. So, Hanukkah...
You mean you didn't get an actual transforming car or something?
No, I didn't get the Ferrari cake that I wanted.
You didn't get the swimming pool full of Jell-O.
I wanted lime Jell-O, not cherry! So Hanukkah, let's see, first day, we would usually get Hanukkah gelt. Not gilt. That's something different. Gelt is those little mostly wax chocolate coins that mm-hmm. come in, like, gold tinfoil.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you're, like, really little, is awesome. Candy!
Yeah.
Awesome candy. Next day would be, like, colored pencils.
Mm-hmm.
Next day would be, like, gloves. It was all, like, really practical, simple stuff. And then the last day would be either one big thing for my brothers and I. My brothers and me.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
I am not the grammar police.
Like, word. Star Wars Monopoly we got 1 year.
Ooh.
Which my older brother loved, but not so much me.
As someone who generally loses at Monopoly...
Yeah.
I do not enjoy it as much.
My reaction to Monopoly is usually, I fucking hate this game! Throw the board and all the pieces across the room. That's how I
never
react to
play
Monopoly.
Monopoly with a business major. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
I did that, you know, like, I used to love Monopoly, then I played some in college with my roommate who was a business major. Yeah. Not a good idea.
No. No. And then if, if Hanukkah overlapped with Christmas, it was basically like Christmas was that one big present day. We got nice, decent stuff. I'd get a Barbie, probably somewhere in there. Started getting video games.
Wow.
So we got older. But it wasn't a big to do. My mom's not much of a cook. So we'd have like a, you know, honey baked ham.
Mm hmm.
It's like the company that delivers ham.
Mm-hmm.
You could actually get it delivered in Japan, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, there's a grocery store in Hiro.
Mm-hmm.
Really ritzy, lots of foreigners neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Big grocery store. Everything's so, so expensive. But they have import stuff. And
that's kind of why it's expensive.
Yeah. I went there a couple weeks ago. And they were giving out honey-baked ham samples. And I kept looping around the store pretending to be somebody different. Oh, what's this? Ham?
Put on some
Thank
glasses.
You. Glasses,
put on
a
hat,
a Groucho mustache. Yeah. So
what is this ham?
Oh, what is this ham? Oh, sorry, I am French. Come back and be Italian or something. Anyway, so...
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Be the most racist stereotype of... In Soviet Russia, we do not have this ham.
I am Russian ham.
In Soviet Russian, ham is frozen. This is tasty. You know?
Yeah, so Christmas was just pleasant.
Yeah.
As I got older, it became less pleasant because suddenly you had to buy gifts for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And my... my parents are divorced. My dad and mom both remarried, different people. My dad's wife, my stepmom, is her family is super, super into Christmas. Like, the whole house is just covered in like stockings and snowflakes and little Santa Clauses.
Electric lights that blink in tandem
yes.
with music sort of thing.
And also Christmas candy, just like in bowls. My mom would flip her shit at that. She would hate that.
One thing I love about Christmas is the candy.
I like the cookies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Christmas cookies.
That's one thing I do definitely miss is baking cookies, because we do not really have an oven at my house.
So. Most houses and apartments don't have ovens.
Yeah.
You might have, like, a toaster oven.
Or a microwave that has an oven capable, but those are actually kind of expensive.
Yeah, and you can't really bake. It doesn't taste the same either.
I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And the older I got, the more I felt really pressured to buy presents. I like buying presents for people and then, like, surprising them with it. Like, hey, I was out and I thought of you and I got this.
I'm fairly certain Chris also feels this way as well. Chris, oneofus.net, one of the founding members. And, you should check out his stuff. But, Chris also mentioned in the past, I think it was back when he was on Spill, that, like, I mean, I share this feeling a lot. I shared this feeling hardcore back when I was a little younger, but, like, I hate celebrating something or doing something because it's that day.
Yep.
Like, I hated on my own birthday. It's just like,
I hate my own birthday too.
You're like, you're only giving this to me because it's my birthday.
Yep.
That was how I felt about that. I mean, I was really deny all holidays and birthdays for like when I was in my 20s. Just like, no, this day, you know, if you're only giving me this because it's this day, then fuck you. That was kind of what my attitude was. I've mellowed out. I've kind of like accepted that is ways how society works. And you know what? It's someone giving you something. Sure, it'd be nice if they surprised you with it like any other day. But you know what? They're giving you something because they like you and appreciate you. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can kind of deal with that now.
Yeah.
I'm not as crankety and old as I was when I was younger.
Old when you were younger. Yes.
If that makes any sense at all.
You're a time traveler, aren't you?
Yes. I regenerated when I was hit 30 and saw Doctor Who. So
that's why you look like a scrawny Italian British man
with a Japanese accent. Yeah.
With a Japanese, you don't have a Japanese accent.
I have a semi-Japanese accent. Nah. You can kind of tell.
You'd never be able to tell him
that. That's the thing. My sister actually said like she only noticed it after she talked to somebody else who was like myself, a Japanese person who would become Americanized. It's just like, what is it about this way this person he talks like Toshi. And apparently, so there is something in how an Asian person speaks that is, I mean, you can't really tell at first, I would say glance, but you can't really tell at first exposure. But over time and like with multiple exposures, you can kind of tell.
Mm.
I don't think it's something people can mimic, though. Not really. Not without, like, going into the hard Asian stereotype mimicking.
I almost did it.
Don't.
But I held it back. Actually, I like to annoy my friends with my impression of a female anime character. Because I was talking about how much I really dislike that stereotypical, like, manic pixie anime girl, like, I don't know what to call it, where, like, she just goes,
Oh God, that'll get onto that'll get off track into another different topic, but I'll get to that.
Christmas.
To that. Christmas.
Okay. Never liked Christmas music. Never. Okay, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. Okay, the crooner's Christmas. Fine. Julie Andrews. Do
Mariah
you hear what I hear? Whatever the hell that's called. I don't even know the name of that song. What is that called?
I forget. It has an official title, but I forget.
I like those. But the, like, modern, quote-unquote modern Christmas songs, like Mariah Carey's modern classic. Fuck that shit. That sentimental bullshit.
You
like it?
I like Christmas music. I really do. I mean,
I just gave Toshi a look.
It kind of stems back from my past where when I was a kid up till I think around like 7 or 8, maybe 9, we went to church on Sundays and we went to church on Christmas as well. And you know,
how'd that end up for you?
Anyways, but yeah, well, I lost my faith when I was in my teens because, anyways, Book of Job, but. He makes a deal with the devil. What the fuck is that? Anyways.
Well, devil's pretty cool.
I'm not knocking the devil. The fact that, like...
I'm not knocking the devil.
I'm not knocking the devil. I'm just knocking the fact that God, the supposed all-supreme being, is so insecure that he has to prove... He feels he needs to prove something to the devil.
He's like, well, I'll show you, stupid devil.
Anyways. Another topic for another time, God. Or another flame war on the internet, whatever. But, at Christmas, they'd always have, like, you know, you'd always sing in church. And it was a Christmas when I was, I think, 6 or 7 when I first realized that I could actually sing. I actually understood music. And,
what brand of Christian are you?
Protestant. I don't know anything beyond that. Like, all those type. What is that?
Sect.
Yeah, that stuff. The old, what's his name? Comedy routine where he breaks down and it's like, are you this? Yes, I am. Are you this? Are you this? Are you that? He breaks it down.
Is it George Carlin?
No, not George Carlin. His name is escaping me. I feel very terrible about it now because this, what I'm saying makes no sense unless you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Is it Bill Cosby?
No.
God fucking Bill Cosby.
Anyway. But it was during one of those sessions at Christmas when we were like singing from the hymn book that I realized that I could sing.
What about the her book?
H-Y-M-N. But this was what
like the Swedish romantic metal band hymn? H-I-M?
No. But I realized that I actually understood music and could sing, so it kind of stems from that, probably, but I've always liked Christmas music. Most of my exposure went during my early teen years to Christmas music was through Dr. Demento, so that kind of made me like it more. Like Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer and stuff like that.
That's Dr. Demento?
Oh, that was
on
his
Dr. Demento's
show.
Okay.
So, because he'd play gag music, funny music. I'd hear different renditions like the Muppets singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas, things like
all
that.
Right. I love the Muppets. I love them. There was like a Muppets Christmas special in like the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like called the Muppets Christmas special where they're like snowed in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that?
I think I did. Was that the one where they met up with the Sesame Street characters also showed up? No, that was a Thanksgiving one. I'm sorry. That was a Thanksgiving special.
Did they eat Big Bird?
No, but there was a turkey that was there that was supposed to be killed by the Swedish chef, and then he managed, the turkey's like, you know,
yeah,
I don't want to be eaten, just like, and so he managed to distract the Swedish chef by showing him Big Bird.
Aww.
And so the Swedish chef is talking to Big Bird, like trying to measure him up and all that stuff. And figure out where to cut him or something like that. It was actually a very heartwarming fun.
Where to cut him.
Yeah. It was a very, no,
Big Bird.
It sounds terrible saying this, but it ends up being a very heartwarming fun.
Have you ever seen Rugby Tiger?
That's a segue. No.
What? It's a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. Muppets, Jim Henson. Mm-hmm. It's the plot of Toy Story. But
Yes.
But it came out in the late 80s.
What was the mouse's name? Damn it, Mew or something like that? I forget his name.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, we are old. People do not have no idea what we're talking about. It was a Christmas special. Basically, it was the plot of Toy Story.
Yep.
It was that toys come alive when no one's around.
I loved Rugby Tiger. I watched that like once a week.
Yeah.
For new friends. A year.
Yeah.
I was going through a phase where I loved cats mm-hmm. and tigers and lions and stuff. So I loved Rugby Tiger. And it's a Christmas. Is it Christmas theme?
Yeah,
sort of?
It is. Yeah. It is. It is a Christmas theme. We probably have to explain it. What is
it
about?
I mean, it's basically this stuffed animal tiger.
Yeah.
And all the other toys come to life. And they're all Muppets.
It's like, well, the thing is that...
It makes it amazing!
Well, the thing is that the way it works is that toys are alive. It's the Toy Story thing.
Yep.
But the catch is that if they get caught out of place,
yep.
like, if someone finds them where they were not before, where they had been placed before, then they lose their... The devil shall rise. They, like, lose their soul. They die, basically. They become lifeless. They become... objects.
Huh.
And
I don't remember that part. I haven't seen it since I was like 5.
Yeah, that was a big part. So they move around, they have fun, they play, but there's this constant fear that like they cannot get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what it was. Like what the main plot what happened. But there was the stuffed tiger and there was also a cat play toy. Mm. The catnip mouse. And they were kind of like they were not like friends, but like it's basically throughout the movie they grow this bond, and then what happens is like the mouse ends up essentially sacrificing himself and then getting caught, and then he becomes lifeless, and then like you know in the end they sing a song of friendship and he comes back to life. But
and the
spoiler too.
Shit, spoilers for a movie.
It's a very heartwarming movie.
25-26 year old movie.
No, there are no time limits on spoilers.
I feel
very terrible. I'm sorry.
So I think it was probably on like ABC
on PBS or ABC.
It wasn't PBS. It was
not. Okay.
It was one of the networks. Okay. Maybe NBC. ABC,
maybe have it record on videotape.
Yes, so I have it recorded on videotape. So first it was Rugby Tiger.
Uh-huh.
Then it was another Jim Henson one about a rabbit who is in several Muppets. He appears again in other Muppet things. I forgot his name, but he's a rabbit. And I remember the plot of that one much better. Basically, it's the rabbit community.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever those are called. And there's a farmer who is trying to catch them and make rabbit stew.
I'm fairly certain I've seen this too, but yeah. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, it's pretty famous, I guess. And the scene that sticks in my mind is the rabbits build a giant rabbit. They all stuff themselves inside this giant rabbit mm-hmm. to scare the farmer mm-hmm. into never making rabbit stew again.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Jim Henson stuff kind of straddles that line of being really adorable and whimsical, but also being a little bit creepy. And the giant rabbit-made rabbit
mm-hmm.
is kind of like that. But I just loved the main rabbit character so much. I also loved rabbits back then. It was all about rabbits and cats.
Some of Jim Henson's stuff, like, is nightmare fuel for
the
kids.
Dark Crystal.
I'm sorry.
The
yeah,
Skeksis.
For those who haven't seen the Dark Crystal, I'm going to spoil the very, very beginning. But one of the Skeksis dies. The Emperor dies, and they have to fight over who's to be the next Emperor.
Trial by stone!
Yeah, but the Emperor dies, and the way he dies is basically he decomposes.
Yeah, so he's like
he falls
very
apart.
Skeletal.
Yeah. And then he basically falls apart into dust, and that freaked me the fuck out.
That was so creepy. That movie, I think one of the reasons why it wasn't that commercially successful was because it was targeted at a youngish audience, probably 8 to 12 or something.
I was in that range. I think I was like 8 or 9 when
I saw it. Yeah, but It was
dark.
Too dark.
It was dark.
Scary.
There's a reason it's called the Dark Crystal. It was dark.
I first saw it when I was probably about 9, and I was scared.
But it was also fascinating at the same time.
It's really beautiful, yeah. Very creative.
The way the world, the sort of, the lore.
Yeah.
Like, the Skixies, and what are they called? The good guys, the...
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, There are two races, the good guy, basically the good guys and the bad guys. I guess you could call them the lawful evil, a lawful good and the chaotic evil, basically. But they're intertwined in a way. It's very interesting. I mean, you'd have to see it, see how it works. But
and it would be interesting more to see that as like a series, because it's so, the world itself
it's very vast
is so vast. Yeah. There are a lot of different races, and it's all about, there's elements of, like, dealing with racism, I'd say, because the main character, the Gelfling.
Yep. Which is, for all purposes, an elf.
Yeah, he's an elf. He's elf-like.
Yeah.
He's, like, he's supposedly the last one.
Yep.
And they all want to kill him. Yeah. The bad guys want to kill him.
Because apparently...
Prophecy.
There's a prophecy. All that
of course stuff. There's a prophecy.
There's always a prophecy.
It's a fantasy movie.
Speaking of Jim Henson, The Labyrinth... was also...
Yeah.
Labyrinth was another one that did... Like, I got to see it when I was older, so it was not as nightmare-inducing, but some of the stuff in the Labyrinth, if you think about it, for a child...
The fire starter people thingies that, like, removed their heads and stuff? Yeah. That was disturbing.
They can basically... Uh-huh. They're modular. They can take themselves apart. Just some of the stuff in that was just, like, for a child...
Yeah. And, like, Hoggle even was kind of gross and weird. Hugging David Bowie's junk.
Yeah. But they're amazing. But for adults...
My favorite Muppet in Labyrinth, David Bowie's junk. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it was dreamy.
But... He's so dreamy. Yeah.
But, I mean, they're...
Labyrinth, basically, I heard that... the Jim Henson Company, they took the, like, audience reaction from the Dark Crystal, because the general reaction was very creative, but too scary.
I saw the Dark Crystal in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm old.
That would have been amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was. It was. But it took, it took, like, half the movie for me to get over that beginning part where the Emperor dies.
Yeah.
Like, it was finally by, like, about the half point, maybe the two-thirds point, by the time I was over it.
Yeah.
Like, by the time its effect had worn off and I could actually have fun with the movie itself.
It's not something you should show little kids. It's just too scary. I mean, the first time I tried to watch it, I got too scared, and my mom shut it off. And then I think the second time I watched it, I was still scared, but I was, like, a little bit older, so I kind of stuck through it. And I had just seen Jurassic Park, so I was very proud of myself for being able to watch a quote-unquote horror movie.
What would you say is a good age to watch that, The Dark Crystal?
Maybe 11. Because I think kids kind of get over... that general, like, Muppets are a little scary thing. Because I love the Muppets. I've always loved the Muppets, but I was always a little bit afraid of some of them. So, like, Sweetum, the big, giant, hairy one, the biggest Muppet in the Muppet canon.
Yeah.
He scared me a lot when I was a kid. And whenever he came on the Muppet Show, I had to, like, kind of not look away. But, Dark Crystal, maybe 11... Labyrinth could go a little bit younger because there's there's a human in it. There's several humans,
and it's also it's got a more closer to home adventure to it because, the Dark Crystal is essentially Lord of the Rings in a way.
Yeah,
but in Lord of the Rings, you're watching a fantasy world.
Yep.
Whereas Labyrinth, you're watching someone from your world go into a world like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is this basis of comparison. Like, there is a mystic fantasy world out there, but it's about someone who you can relate to. Someone from your world who goes there.
Yeah.
And so, it's a lot easier to get into.
And I think the age of the protagonist, Sarah, played by Jennifer Connelly.
Yep. Yeah.
Jennifer. And her eyebrows.
Yep.
And before she got decent at acting.
Yeah. Before The Rocketeer.
I still haven't seen that.
I still haven't seen it either. I want to, but it is, to quote, I forget who said it, but to quote somebody, it is the most boring movie about a jetpack ever.
I feel like that's something Brian would say.
Yeah, I think Brian actually loves it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I would not be surprised.
Jennifer Connelly is supposed to be 15 in the movie or mm-hmm. something, 14, 15. She's a teenager.
Yeah.
And I think kids 11, 13, 14 relate with teenagers like that because they're almost teenagers.
She's somewhat prepubescent, a little early. She's sort of reaching that sort of rebellion, somewhat.
Right, so, like, she's in her own little fantasy world. She loves fantasy books, and she loves playing pretend and playing dress-up, but she has adult responsibilities, like looking after her infant brother, half-brother.
Yeah.
And so the interesting concept of the whole movie is that did she actually just kind of imagine?
Was it a Wizard of Oz thing?
And you were there, and you were there. Or did it actually happen? Is there really the world of the labyrinth?
I like to think there's the world there. And I like to think that, like, it just so happened, like, she was...
There's a world where David Bowie rules over Muppets?
Yes.
Yes, I want to go there. But Are you kidding me?
I kind of want to, like, that... Because when I was a kid, when I first saw it, I did not understand that she didn't realize it was all true. Like, when it starts out, like, she's saying, like, she talks about this goblin kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when I was a kid, I thought she was actually, like, you know, you don't know this, but this stuff is actually out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually, like, the king of the goblins is in love with me, and he'll grant me this one wish. When I got older and watched the movie again, I realized, like, oh, she's playing out a fantasy.
Yeah.
But it just happens to be true.
Yeah.
And she didn't realize it, mm-hmm. and then whoops, sort of thing. But she's also, part of her wants to believe it, so, like, part of her, she's in that sort of, there must be more out there in the world than just the world. Like, that wanting to believe that she can accept it very easily.
Mm-hmm. And I like the message that it basically says, you don't have to choose one or the other. You don't have to choose growing up and getting rid of your fantasy world, or staying a child and living in your fantasy world forever. You can have both. That you should
really
never
watch Labyrinth again.
I know. I like think about that.
We were talking about Christmas, and now
this is Muppets are Christmas friendly.
Yeah.
So but it basically says don't ever give up your imagination, which is so purely Jim Henson's message that, like, your imagination is your most powerful gift. Use it. Don't ever lose it. Exercise it.
I think the Labyrinth... I don't understand why the Labyrinth... Well, okay. If the Labyrinth... If it was released in theaters in Japan now, it would quite possibly be much more popular. I mean, it has virtually no...
What's the status of the Muppets here?
They exist. It's a puppet show. It's like... It's kind of that... It goes beyond that sort of line of acceptance mm-hmm. of otaku. Like, otaku can go anime, they can do cosplay,
mm-hmm.
puppets?
Muppets?
It goes into that area. It kind of goes into... It's that sort of people in America who don't understand geeks. It's kind of like that.
Ah, okay.
That's the way... So, puppets are kind of... They sort of straddle that line.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, people are kind of like, puppets are okay. For little kids.
But, like, the America has grown up with the Muppets.
Yeah,
it's always been a part of, mm-hmm. like, not always, but it's been a part of society
since,
for so
like,
long.
Like, the 50s.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Henson, when did he first start out? Like, have you seen...
Late 50s.
Yeah, like, you've seen those first images, those gigantic teeth monster he made, like, furry teeth. Like, that essentially evolved into becoming, like, mm-hmm. the monsters from the Sesame Street and stuff like that. But just, like, the first pictures, the black and white, holy fuck, those are crazy.
Yeah, and the original Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
he was basically a sock.
So I think a Japanese audience would have difficulty, well, has difficulty latching on to the Muppet things, like Muppet franchise and, like, things like Labyrinth, Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
But... But the fact that the main character of Sarah is so definitely a what Japanese would define as a chunibyo. Like, mm-hmm. if you want, like, you've heard, people may have heard that term in, people who are into anime and otakuism and stuff like that have heard the term chunibyo.
Mm-hmm.
The start, like, this character of Sarah from Labyrinth at the very start, that is basically textbook.
Yeah.
At what a
chunibyo. Can you explain what that is?
It is, I define it as someone who has, is in arrested development of, mm-hmm. of puberty. Like,
yeah,
they have trouble accepting that the world is the world. That mm-hmm. they have trouble accepting reality, the harshness of reality. They want a fantasy, and mm-hmm. they want to believe that they are the main character in that fantasy. Mm-hmm. And even though part of them knows it's not true, it can't be true, they find this sort of interesting space of denial. Mm-hmm. Like, I have this magical power, but I can't use it because yeah. of something, like something would bad would happen. And so there's this constant state of like, I have all this mm-hmm. stuff. I had like the special me, the secret me, the superhero is in there, but I can't, it would destroy the world.
That's so quintessentially yeah. Japanese.
So that, I mean, there are a lot of anime, especially recent mm-hmm. anime that have covered that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that all characters, like, because Japanese anime is very good at going to like the fantasy stuff,
mm-hmm.
but recent anime is also focused on like the fact that it's not real, mm-hmm. but you want it to be real,
yeah.
and that sort of person who's lost in that sort of, they have not reached that stage of adulthood where like they can accept that reality yeah. is actually enough. Reality is enough. Like,
no, it's not. What are you talking about?
Like, what was that? I love that YouTube. Video like what is it? Science Saved My Soul. Like, it's about,
seen that.
Oh, it's a great, like, it's about a guy who just like he looked up in the night sky one night and like saw the Milky Way,
mm-hmm.
and just like he knew all the science behind it, like, but yet just the vastness of it, how amazing it all was,
mm-hmm.
but it was not a quote unquote religious experience.
Yeah,
but a religious person would describe it as such, but he's just mm-hmm. like, but he's like, it's not that, like, the whole vastness, amazing, like, how amazing the universe is, and just like, isn't that enough?
I imagine that's what astronauts feel when yeah. they are out in space mm. and looking down at the Earth and then looking out into the stars.
Yeah. It's just like, boom, wow. But it's just like, and yet,
here, and then David Bowie starts singing control to Major Tom.
Oh God. But here on Earth, like, we're not content with that. As children.
I'm definitely not. Haha.
No, yes, well, we love Supernatural. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like the whole concept behind stuff like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Or Apocalypse movies and TV shows, The Walking Dead, you believe in your head that you will be the survivor.
Yeah.
You will be the hero of the story.
Yeah.
But in reality, yeah. probably won't be.
But I mean, it's escapism. And I mean, I love movies. I love TV shows. I watch Supernatural. It's one of my favorite TV shows. And like, I mean, I love stuff like that.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm willing to accept reality. Like, that's not reality. That's not real.
What are you talking about, Toshi?
Oh, shit. This has been an intervention. Sarah, we need to sit down. Well, you're sitting down. We need to talk. No, but anyway.
We don't have time. We have a tulpa to take care of.
But, like, but. It's not but, a tulpa. But the definition, anyways, but the definition of a chunibyo is someone who can't.
Yeah.
Well, who does not. Like, who is firmly in denial of that.
She cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sarah.
And the character of Sarah is textbook that, like, in the beginning, just mm-hmm. like, I'm the Goblin Kingdom, and the Goblin King is in love with me, and he'll grant me this one wish, and just like, and then she does this, like, oh, Goblin King, it's like, and she does this
chant. Did she say I wish?
Yeah, like, she makes this chant, and like this fantastical chant, of course nothing happens.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Oh, man, I love the Muppets.
Yeah.
Whenever they would have, like, a celebrity on Sesame Street or whatever.
Yes.
And they got to talk with Kermit.
Yes.
And they got to hug Kermit.
Yeah.
I want nothing more in this world than the chance to hug Kermit the Frog. I know it's a person's hand in a felt puppet. I don't care. I want to hug Kermit the Frog.
I miss Super Grover. I miss Grover. I miss Grover, period.
Is Grover not in Sesame Street?
He used to be essentially, like, the main character. For the most, like, I mean, yes, Kermit, it was essentially, like, Kermit was, like, the leader, but he was also, like, he's the leader of the Muppets. Kermit was, like, an all-encompass. He's, like, kind of, like, God, in a way, but, like, cause, like, he was voiced by Jim Henson, obviously. He's the main, like, main Henson character.
Brian Henson.
But Grover was always the everyman, in a way. He was, like, he's clueless, but...
I don't like Grover.
But, like, he was adventurous. He was very relatable for a child audience. And then Elmo came, and...
I fucking hate Elmo. Yeah. Elmo was fine as, like, a once-in-a-while character. But that, like...
Elmo says, "Repress your feelings."
Tickle me, Elmo. I was too old when that came out, but I think my little brother was like...
Brian Salisbury does a great Elmo impression. Oh. We should get him to do that.
Yes, request.
Brian Salisbury, we know you listen to this podcast. Do an Elmo... You know, next time, I don't know, digital noise or
just
whatever.
Just randomly do an Elmo voice, please. Sesame Street is a treasure, a national treasure. I hope if aliens ever come to Earth and they get one message, it's a single episode of Sesame Street, and they see that we are deep down good.
Pre-80s Sesame Street, please.
80s and early. Yeah. I mean, Sesame Street's still good. I've seen a couple, not a couple episodes, but like segments from it. Sesame Street.
Like the aliens, the two aliens who would always come down and talk to each other. Those, Those guys were comedy gold.
I hated those guys so much. Those were Muppets that scared me.
Oh.
I didn't like those.
Looking back at them now, I mean, it's just like, nope.
I feel like in another, like, alternate universe, I could have been one of the Jim Henson actors, like the Muppeteer or whatever they call them. I was like actually really close to going to school for puppetry.
Wow.
Yeah. University of Connecticut has a puppetry major. I imagine it's quite small, but I didn't go there for university, but I was like, you know what? Why the fuck not? But I decided not to. So maybe there's an alternate universe, Sarah, where I'm actually the voice of some amazing
puppet. Did that movie ever get made, being Big Bird? I think it was like on Kickstarter or something like that. About the guy who basically played Big Bird.
I don't know. You'd find out. Big Bird.
Check it when we have time.
We've talked about... Gordon, or no, what was his name? Not Gordon. One of the cast, the human cast of Sesame Street dying.
Oh, Mr. Looper?
Yeah. All right, we won't bring that up because I don't want to cry right now. So, Christmas. Christmas! So, Christmas Muppets, those are my happy, happy memories.
Getting way back to the beginning of the conversation, but that's kind of what made Christmas about family for me. Mm-hmm. It was about, like, these friends getting together and celebrating, you know, and celebrating their love for each other. I mean, it's kind of like a universal birthday. Mm-hmm. It's supposedly the birth of Christ, but we know that's been distorted.
The birth of Kermit T. Frog.
But anyways, I always felt sorry for people who were born on Christmas.
My
sister was born on the 24th.
Oh,
Christmas Eve.
That sucks.
Yeah, but
that's like child neglect.
But
in
no,
my
but
mind.
But that means she got to whenever she wanted. Once during the year, she got to have a birthday party.
Oh, that's the way to do it. Yeah. Your parents are smart.
Yeah, but Christmas has always been like that heartwarming feeling I always loved, which I never really got in Japan. It's very surface. I mean, it's not even to the level of commercialism that the U.S. is. I mean, definitely, but it's not that whole gimme, gimme, gimme sort of thing.
Yeah, people don't give big gifts. The big thing is like Christmas cake, right? Which is white cake, white frosting, and strawberries, which,
Your standard strawberry shortcake.
Yeah, it's a strawberry shortcake. Nothing wrong with that. I like
not the cartoon, but
yeah, I like a nice white cake once in a while.
Cool whip.
Yeah. Last Christmas, I had a pretty nice Christmas actually. A bunch of friends and I, we ran around drunk mm-hmm. on the streets. We went to a supermarket. Threw like a bunch of food in a basket.
Ooh.
Brought it back to one friend's apartment. We watched The Neverending Story.
Oh, wow.
Which is not Jim Henson, no, but it's very not, well done.
It's a very well, it's kind of like the first, like when the horse. Anyways.
Vortex!
Yeah, like that's kind of like not, that's hard. Like, I don't think that's one of the things, like, throughout the movie, I don't think I got over. Like, I mean, with Dark Crystal, with the Emperor dying at the very beginning, spoilers, yeah. That's like, that took me like half to two thirds of the movie to get over and get into the movie. But like, what happens to the horse, I don't think I ever got over.
No, it was
And that's also, that's also early on in the movie.
Yeah. But. It's so, like, as a kid, you don't see animals dying in movies. Yeah. And then,
it's
sorry,
not,
spoiler. Well, like, Artax, okay. The horse.
Yes, spoilers. And, I'm very sorry. It happens early yeah. on. It's not graphic.
Have
it's
you
not that
yeah,
sort
no.
of like no? But it is.
It's emotionally graphic.
It's emotionally dark. It is like.
Have you ever read the book?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
I read up like beyond that stuff where Bastion, like when he.
Yeah, the book is actually the Neverending Story movie, the first one and the second one.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen, but I read a plot synopsis. I heard it's really bad. The yeah, book is really, really good. It's so creative.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. And talk about wanting to live in a fantasy world. As yeah. Bastion Balthazar Bux or whatever yeah. his name is.
Interesting thing, like, I read the book when I was, like, I don't know, 10 or 11, so, like, I was not sophisticated enough to understand. I have not read it since. Okay. So a lot of it is gone. But one thing I really remember, which was very creative about the mm-hmm. book, is it has 26 chapters, and every chapter starts with a different letter of the alphabet. It starts from A to Z. Every chapter.
I did not know that.
Yes.
And it's translated from German.
Really?
Yeah,
I did not know
that. It's a German
that.
Book, I think.
Wow.
I believe.
That I did not know.
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
it's a German
but,
book.
Yeah, but like if the book every like so like every if like I think I was considering this was like I was like because obviously I was very young,
mm-hmm.
did not really understand sophisticated stuff. Most of the stuff is gone from my head now. But I was like reading halfway through the book, I was like, there like every time I'd go to a new chapter, I'd notice like the first letter seemed to be missing, like and you turn the page back and like it shows a picture of a letter,
huh.
And like and with stuff what happens in that chapter all in pictures and then in that. Like, in the book I read.
I gotta reread it.
Yeah.
I read it maybe 10, 11 years ago. I read it yeah. as a late teen, I think.
I read it when I was not, yeah. again, not sophisticated enough to really understand or appreciate it, but I saw the movie, I really liked it, and was interested, so I read it.
It's really interesting going back and reading more complex children's novels as an adult. Like, I reread The Golden Compass, his Dark Materials series maybe 8 or 9 years ago and there was I read it when they were first coming out. I think I read The Golden Compass when I was 11 and then I read the Subtle Knife when that came out. And
Golden Compass, wasn't that another movie that was supposed to be a series
it wasn't that bad but it was not great. The casting was so perfect. The girl who played the main character, the child actress, I mean, she was probably like 13 or whatever. She was so good. Nicole Kidman as Mrs. Kota was so evil, so perfect. Daniel Craig was good as well.
I think it was not series sustainable sort of.
No.
Yeah. Because that was another thing that like they wanted it to be a big fantasy series.
Yeah, they tried.
Everybody wanted us trying to look for the next Harry Potter.
The direction was bad. They chose a director who was really inexperienced. I don't think he knew how to handle it. And the Christian right protested during production because the book is very anti-organized religion.
Okay.
which as an adult reading that, I was like, oh yeah. So like when I was 11, I think I got it. Mm-hmm. I saw it more as anti-authority than anti-religion. Oh, you would love it. It's really good.
Of course, that means I'd have to sit down and read it.
Yeah.
Time for, but.
It's three books. And then it's just over. By Philip Pullman. It's a really amazing series. It's beautifully written. It's complex. But it's easy enough for a early junior high school student, late elementary school student to understand. Great for adults. I recommend it. The Golden Compass.
That was just so much Christmas. The Wayward Podcast.
Yeah.
This Christmas episode, I'm not really sure when we're going to be recording next. I'm not sure if it's going to be after Christmas or like right before.
Well, we got to record before because it's only the 7th today.
Okay, so.
We got to record maybe not next weekend, but maybe the weekend after.
Yeah, so.
And then we got to record after I go to the Hollywood Collectors Convention. I just got my tickets for that.
Yep.
So if anyone's in Tokyo, go to the Hollywood Collectors Convention. I know it's on December 27th and 28th in Tokyo and the 29th in Osaka. Mr. Norman Reedus.
Reedus.
Mark Norman Reedus.
And?
We'll be there.
And?
And? Steven Yeun? So, Wait.
And?
John Bernthal? Whatever? No.
And?
He won't be there.
And?
Shut up, Toshi! Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead, who plays Glenn, is replacing John Bernthal. Who played Shane, because nobody gives a shit about Shane! Shane!
But, and
I'll be there.
And?
And my friends will be there.
And... God,
there'll be lots and lots of action figures comic books.
I think they've got another guest.
Misha Collins.
Who?
Misha Collins.
Who?
Misha Collins.
Misha Collins.
Misha Collins!
Okay.
A.K.A. Bay. A.K.A. Kiss. A.K.A. Buddy. A.K.A. Baby in a Trench Coat.
A.K.A. What was his name in that documentary?
Miska.
Miska.
A.K.A. Dimitri.
Dimitri, there we go.
Krushnik. That's his real name, though.
Really?
You didn't know his name?
No.
His real name is Dimitri Krushnik Tippins. It's like, okay, this is why I am 100% convinced that the entire Supernatural and the entire cast were created in a machine that was especially designed for fans, like fangirls and stuff, because Dimitri Krushnik Tippins, that's not a human being's name. That's if you saw that in a book, you'd be like, what the fuck is this stupid name?
Well, it's a good idea. Good choice to go with Misha Collins as the actor's name.
Yeah, so his nickname when he was growing up was Misha. But Dimitri, the nickname for Dimitri is not Misha in Russian. It's like, it's something else. But his mother misunderstood. Because she, like, apparently his mother did, like, a study abroad in Russia or something like that and really liked the name Misha.
Okay.
So she wanted to name her son, so on his, like, birth certificate, she wanted the full name. And this was before Google, so she couldn't, like, look it up. So she thought it was Dimitri, but it's not.
Oh, okay.
Misha is short for Mikhail, I think, which is Michael.
Yeah.
So his nickname is wrong.
Yeah.
His last name is Krushnik. His side, I think, is Krushnik, and his father's side is Tippins.
Huh.
I mean, Tippins is
So where did Collins come from? Just random? It sounded better, I guess?
So, like, when he was on 24, he played an Estonian guy, in the audition, he handed in his resume as Dmitry Krushnik. So he knew he was going into this audition, he needed to play an Eastern European badass.
Wow.
So he came into the audition and says, "Hello, my name is Dmitry. Nice to meet you." Like, he puts on this accent.
Yeah.
And with a name like Dmitry Krushnik, you would assume he's some form of Eastern European.
Yeah.
So he goes through the whole audition. They're like, oh, okay, he's perfect. He looks very Eastern European. Just the way he looks. Apparently he's only like a little teeny tiny bit Eastern European, but he looks very Eastern European. So he goes to the audition, he lands the role, he comes in to the first rehearsal, and he's like, "Hi everyone, good morning, nice to meet you, my name's Misha." And they're like, "What happened to your accent?" He's like, "I grew up in Massachusetts."
Wow.
And that's why Misha Collins is the most magical human being in all of existence.
And Sarah is going to go see him on the 27th.
Yes, I am so stupidly excited.
She is going to attempt to assault Misha Collins.
I'm not
going to
assault him. I'm just going to lick his face.
And we'll have pictures of her taking selfies as she's being dragged away by security.
So this is... I wouldn't... So, okay. If I had $360 lying around, I would have paid for
both
Misha and Norman.
Yeah.
But I had to choose. I had to choose between Bay and Norman.
Uh-huh.
It was very hard. But I figured Supernatural always takes precedent to everything else. I have to go with Misha. It's Misha. And I just like saying Misha.
You know what? I am going to give you a voice recorder, and I'm going to make you
talk. Oh, I have one. Okay. Oh, yeah, I am. I'm going to record stuff.
Yes, definitely. Please, I want you to record. Yes.
Yeah. It's so I paid for an autograph and a picture.
Ooh.
What
are you going to get it autographed on? Like your chest or just like...
No. I have a mug that Mark Shepard autographed.
Ah, okay.
So I'm going to have Misha do the other side.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you the Mark Shepard?
Yes, you did.
Sorry, okay, yeah. I didn't meet him. I'm very disappointed. I wish I could have. My friend met him at some random convention in Sacramento, California. He was there just because...
Mark Shepard.
Mark Shepard's another person I would definitely choose to get his autograph and photo with over almost anyone else. Because Mark Shepard is basically Crowley.
Yeah.
Human Crowley.
More than...
Or maybe not human.
More than Sam or Dee or...
Yeah, like...
More than Jared Padalecki.
Jared Padalecki is not like Sam at all. Yeah. He's more like Dean. And then Jensen is like white rice. He's just... No. What's a good analogy for Jensen? He's a Thomas Kincaid painting. He's really nice to look at, but there isn't that much substance.
Oh, okay. That's
sorry, nice. Jensen fans.
But you're the authority on this.
Yeah.
So.
And I would love to meet Jared Padalecki because
Chris shook his hand.
I know. They're like best friends now because he shook his hand.
Yes.
I think Chris mentioned, he's like, "Well, Sarah, you shook my hand." and then I shook Jared's hand. Therefore, it's like you shook his hand. And I just thought, "Well, now he has the sickness." This is so random. But I'm just thinking about weird fandomy.
Well, we're reaching the tail end of the podcast.
I want to tell this story. It's really short.
Yes.
I put it on Facebook, and I just like to tell it because I was laughing so hard, and I was so embarrassed for obvious reasons. You'll hear. I was watching a movie with Kat, and I was falling asleep on the couch. We were watching The Social Network.
Ah. I wanted to ask which movie. Okay.
I was dozing a little bit for like 2 seconds. And I woke myself up.
Mm-hmm.
By yelling. can't even get it out. I was like, Norman Reedus! And Kat was just like, what? And I was like, I just started laughing so hard because I was so embarrassed. But it was also like, Norman Reedus isn't in that movie.
Yeah, no, he's not.
Not at all. We hadn't even been talking about Norman Reedus or The Walking Dead or anything else.
This is the sickness. You do not
This is the sickness. And, like, then I was thinking maybe, like, somewhere in L.A., at the same exact time,
Norman Reedus just got a chill.
He just like, wakes up. Sarah DeVore! And his, one of his, truck stop hookers, Shandine, is like, that's not my name, honey. My name's Shandine. And he's like, I know. Well, I didn't really know, but I gotta go take care of something. So he gets on his bike and he starts driving.
It would not be a wayward podcast without a Norman Reedus anecdote. Actually, we're running short on time, so we probably only talked about like half of what we really wanted to cover.
Oh, but what else is new?
But anyways, yeah, rather short podcast this time around, about an hour. Anything you want to add?
No. We'll save stuff
for next time.
Next time,
if we remember to talk about it.
Yep.
Once again, thank you, Eli. It was great meeting you.
And everybody should listen to our show all the time.
Yes.
I don't know why I said
on
that.
On oneofus.net, we are part of the World of Us cast. I think, what happened to the Hong Kong show? It is. But we're part of the World of Us cast. This is the Wayward Podcast on oneofus.net.
You can email us at waywardpodcast@gmail.com.
Or follow us at waywardpodcast, all one word, on Twitters. And as a song going, I was considering like doing a Christmas song going
on,
but
not yet. Can we play, I'm going to a concert today.
Oh, yes.
Can we play one of my friend's songs?
Yes.
I'll have to get the name.
Okay.
But the name of her band is Chess Rocks. Chess. C-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
She is an American, who does music here in Japan. Okay. She is amazing. Her music is so amazing, so good. I'm really excited about going to this concert in about an hour.
Okay.
So,
which is kind of why we have to
edit short. So I'll ask her what song she would want me to play.
Okay.
We'll play that.
And I think that's all we have for this episode. Kind of a short one again, but we will.
Shorty but a goodie.
Shorty but a goodie. Goodie?
Goodie!
Goodie! Philip
Reedus.
I'm Toshi.
I'm Sarah.
And we'll catch you next time.
Break down on a summer's day when I hear the news at night. Rushes as my hair gives in my vision fades to the light. Head spins as I'm swept away as you fade from my sight. A million waves come crashing down. This can't be right. Shooting stars, she fades away. There she goes. Now everything's gonna be okay. Remember back when we used to play up and down, not far away. We used to laugh, we used to spite and scream and say all that you'd wanna say. Apologize for a world so good I couldn't see you for who you are. A sweet child, you shone so bright. Now you're gone like a shadow.